I think the big drastic change has definitely been hiring a team now, having a team behind me, because for the longest time it was a one-man band, one-man show type of situation, and really knowing how to hire contractors, build that team, and then just have people take care of different parts of the business, and that way I'm not just in the business day in, day out. I think that's been the biggest change.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Hustle to Freedom podcast, where I show you that you don't have to be a natural born entrepreneur to build a business that gives you time freedom, location freedom, and financial freedom. My name is Ryan Helms, and in just 27 months, I paid off over $209,000 in debt, quit my 9-to-5 job, and started building my dream business that scaled to six figures of income in less than 6 months. And on this podcast, I'll be sharing exactly how I did it and bring on some awesome guests that are either doing it or have already done the same thing. So if you're a freedom chaser and you want to fast track that process, this is the podcast for you. And also, be sure to head over to gritandhustle.co to grab your free copy of the Side Hustle Journal. But for now, let's hop in to today's episode. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Hustle to Freedom podcast. And going with this theme, we are catching up with old guests. This time, we're backtracking about a year and a half, and we're chatting with Mr. Anthony Ambrose to talk about his journey with YouTube. Last time we chatted with him, he was definitely making some moves in the space. He had gone through a couple rough patches. He was coming out of those. And now we're going to hear about how he has kind of taken his business to the next level, what's happened over the past year and a half. And then at the end of this, if you're interested in YouTube as a content platform, which you should be, we are going to dive into some strategies, tips, tactics, whatever you want to call it, around YouTube, what's working in 2020, and how you can take your content game to the next level. So with that said, Anthony, welcome back.
Hey, glad to be back. Excited.
Awesome, dude. So we're going to go for round two here. So to kind of kick things off, like, has there been any like fundamental shifts like in your business in the past year and a half? Has anything drastic changed?
I think the big drastic change has definitely been hiring a team now, having a team behind me, because for the longest time it was a one-man band, one-man show type of situation, and really knowing how to hire contractors, build that team, and then just have people take care of different parts of the business, and that way I'm not just in the business day in, day out. I think that's been the biggest change.
What got you to that point? So, I mean, I would guess it means you got more clients, right? All right, cool. Definitely. So that's a good thing, right? It's an awesome problem, quote unquote, to have. So what got you to the point? We'll get to the hiring and kind of like what you've learned and how you got through that. But how'd you start getting more clients that even got you to the point where you needed to do that?
Yeah. So one thing that happened was, I think where we last left off, I hadn't experienced the world of Funnel Hacking Live, for those who are familiar with that event. And so I went there, soaked it all up. And just as I like to do whenever I go to an event, I like to make those connections. And then I left the event with potential clients. And then eventually they became clients. And I was just motivated, inspired. And I was like, all right, I got to go out there. I got to put the things that I've learned to work, execute on them. And so that's exactly what I did. I basically started saying, hey, I've been doing YouTube for a while, managing people's channels. I started going into this realm of creating my own program and my own coaching program. And so I said, I'm going to take on 10 people. I'm going to offer a program to 10 people, reached out to some of those people I met that I networked with. And then they signed up. And then those were my 10 students to just focus on, work with, and build out my program, consulting and coaching and working with their YouTube channels that way.
Right. So these were people you met at Funnel Hacking Live, which for those of you that don't know, is a big event. I think last year it was like 4,000 or 5,000 people that a company called ClickFunnels puts on. Actually, I saw Anthony there this past year. But so you went there, you met these people, and this program break down a little bit more about that. Like what type of program was it? Was it kind of like a beta program where it wasn't really built out and you're building it out with these people? Kind of unpack that a bit for us.
Oh yeah, definitely beta, where it was like, I'm going to give you my one-on-one time. So 10 people, one-on-one. I got to learn a lot in that experience of doing, 10 calls every week for, and I think the way I set it up too in the beta, I was like, I will work with you for 12 weeks. Like, we'll work on your channel, build it out, everything. And so that's how I positioned it. I even charged very little for it just to get those 10 people. where pretty soon after a month, I was like, what did I do to myself? I think I just charged $500 for, even though at the time, like I had clients that would pay me, $2,000 a month to work with them. And for some reason I was like, I guess I felt like it would be fair since I was guinea pigging people and being like, we're going to build out a program together and these calls are going to be specific to you. But from those calls, I'll learn to know what that process should really look like, what that framework should look like. So in the end, as I worked with them, midway through, I started to build out and record lessons, because as I taught the process, I would then go back and refine it and be like, okay, now I can deliver it as a lesson and record it and film it. And so then those who were in the beta basically started getting the recorded lessons. And then from there, I started to realize like, okay, basically I had this evolution. I was like, okay, this is what I'm teaching, but I'm realizing that some people are still struggling with these parts of when it comes to YouTube. And so then I was like, all right, I'm going to scrap it all and restart it over. but again, like this whole process really built a lot of momentum behind it, because those 10 students I worked with one-on-one, they got great results. They started telling friends and it started to build my community. Because as I shared their experiences and their testimonials and what was happening with them, like that just started to bring in a whole new array of customers and clients and new opportunities to work with people. So definitely intense situation and doing one-on-ones at a low price. but in addition
to your retainer clients, right?
Yeah. Which was sort of funny, because it's like, I was giving the same amount of time and energy to them both. Another thing I actually realized too is that I would say out of the 10 people I worked with, I would say half of them got the results they wanted and the other half sort of stopped showing up, which was like mind blowing to me, because I was like, you guys paid and like you're not showing up to calls and you're not doing anything. And it was heartbreaking for me, because I'm like, I want them to succeed, right? And then to this day, some of those past students, I've moved them and upgraded them to the newer programs that have so much more and still offer a lot of my time there, but they still don't show up. But yet I see them working.
The funny thing is, like, like you're saying, it was really strange to me when I like first got into this whole like online entrepreneurship thing, that people would pay for something and not show up. Like the first time it happened, so when we came out like with our first small little course, it wasn't that people didn't show up. You would just see people go through like 20% of the course and not go through anything else. Yeah. And then we sold a beta. It was $1,000 a pop. We sold 10 of them. We limited it to 10. So that was a quick $10,000 off one Facebook post, which was awesome. Like, I'd never experienced anything like that. I thought that was the coolest thing in the whole world. But we only had 7 people ever reach out to us. Like, we had 3 people that paid us and never even got in contact with us. And then we had a couple people that we've sold for lack of a better word, I don't want to get into like our internal terminology, but like small scale podcast launches, and they would be like $3,000-$4,000, something like that. Never hear from them again. We'd have a couple calls. They would lose momentum because they would have something else going on in their business, and we just never hear from them again. And I thought that was crazy. And then we were talking to one of our clients, and she we kind of brought this up with her, and she was like, yeah, it really doesn't matter the price point. She's like, I have coaching students that have paid me $12,000 and never got on the first call. Mm. I was like, bro, that like blows my mind that people would do that.
I mean, of course it's a mindset thing, but man, that is, I feel like, I don't know. I can't think of situations where I've just blew money and not taking any action. I mean, on lower end courses, yeah, but like, I don't know, once you start getting into those five digit realms, like it's just a little wild to me.
Yep, totally. So if you're listening right now and you buy stuff and don't use it, stop, start using it. Cool, man. So you built out this program and you kind of went through it with these beta people, but you still had this service-based side of your business as well, where you had these clients on retainer. Like, how did you start moving them both in parallel? So you started doing iterations on the course, making it better, trying to get more people into that. Were you at this, did you just shift your focus to that, or were you like parallel moving these two sides of the business together?
So what I did is I felt like I sort of did like an off and on season, right? Where I knew that those who had it was more agency side stuff. I would work with them for a season, and then my course people, like that was continual. But then I didn't open up the program until the end of 2019, right? Like I just stayed behind the scenes, modifying it, building more content to it, and then making sure people got results. And then when 2019, 2020, well, when 2020 came, before the craziness happened,
shit hit the fan.
I actually started to put more of a cap on the agency side, right? I was working with another agency where I would do a lot of work for them on the side as in white label. But then got to a point where they were charging a different price than I wanted to charge. And at the same time, the clients that they were bringing in weren't clients that I was really focused on. And so right there, I parted ways. And then it was a quick, because like when you're doing agency work, like that's very current income. But it was one of those risks I had to take to be like, all right, these aren't the clients I want to work with, and this isn't the price I want to charge. And so I'm just going to cut this off, like give my notice and be like, hey, I'm going a different direction. And that happened. It was great. And then it was like,
was that scary?
It definitely was, because it was like, all right, there goes, you know, I think it was like a recurring like 5,000 plus every month I was coming in, and it's like, all right, well, that's gone. So it's like, how do I make it up, right? But luckily, like what happened was it was around the same time that I was already ready with my program, and I was ready to do another beta launch of the new program. And when I did that, I was able to get a good amount of students in that recuperated what I lost. And then even on that part, like I started to actually put out more content. And a lot of that content was using that whole philosophy of the Dream 100, right? Like, where is my customer base? Who are the people I want to focus on? And so I started to write posts within the ClickFunnels group about my case studies, about what I had done with other people on YouTube and how I built their channels and what kind of strategies and tactics I used. And from one of those posts is how I was able to get a good number of new students to the program. And then also get some agency clients at the price that I did want to charge. And now, I don't know if I was going, I'm running ahead here, but now I have the program running, it's going. And then on the agency side, like since I started getting a handful of clients there, I was like, okay, now I can build a team. And some of those team members actually came from being previous students who I knew already knew the process, who knew the work and how to do it. So it was very easy.
I want to ask you about that, because I've had other people tell me as well that the best people that you can hire are like past students. And we've got one client, she's got an eight-figure business, and all of her coaches, her business model is built around a coaching program. All of her coaches are all past people that have gone through her program. That's like a criteria to be a coach. We've got some other clients that they're VAs and marketing assistants and operations managers. They're all people that have gone through like courses of theirs, or were in their Facebook group or something like that. So like, how did you like put a filler out there and see, or did people just like come to you?
So I did put the word out. And then when I saw people, who applied and were interested, really quickly, I could tell there was a difference between somebody who was like, oh, this seems like fun, right? One of those situations like, oh yeah, I've always wanted to learn YouTube. And it's like, it's one of those situations like, well, I don't know if I'm really in a position to want to train someone this whole process. Cause then that's definitely taking a lot of time to train someone, to then possibly have them not stick around once they learn the process and like, oh, I don't want to do this, to those who already knew how to do it and were interested in being part of the team and working with me. Because I already knew they understood the methods and how to do it. So it was less training on my part and just having full confidence and trust in them that they could do the work. So, I think that was the easiest hire I've ever had to do.
How many people do you have on your team?
So on my team, I have an editor, and then I have an optimization guy, so channel optimization, and then I have an admin. So it's a team of three. And then right now I'm in that realm of like finding a possible designer or looking to get a designer, which again, I'm reaching out to the circle of people that I know have those skills, right? And then possibly getting another optimization person to join the team. But yeah, that's where I'm at.
So, right, one question I see a lot of people have is, how do you know what to pay these people?
Oh yeah. So one thing that I looked at was, I honestly started it on the low end at first, right? Like where I was like, we're going to do sort of like an hourly type of situation because I don't know at the same time how long it's going to take someone else to do it. Right. So it was like, all right, let's, from the beginning, I think the way I started was like, all right, let's do it project based in an hourly setup. So I could see how long it takes for you to complete this project. And so I think for optimization at first, I was around like the $10 an hour type of situation because I knew they had something else, but this was more of a side thing for them. But then once I saw the work that they were able to produce and see what they could do, like within that same month, it was like, all right, I'm bumping you up to, you know, 20, or I'm bumping you up to 15 or whatever. Right. And that's how it was with each person. It's like, all right, I'm starting here. And as I see the what you're doing, it's like, all right, I'm bumping you up. And then right now it's getting to that point where I'm like, all right, I'm just going to have you take full control. And then when I hire someone else, you get to train them. And so now you get paid more on a retainer base. Because now it's like, yep, more work's coming in and they have more responsibilities. And the way I see it is like the less management I do with anyone, then it's like, here's the retainer, do what you do best. Like, and if it's me just like constantly coming back to be like, hey, or like, it's like, the thing is too, I'm not checking up on people. I'm not micromanaging anyone. Yeah. And it's funny because when I work with other clients in an agency role, they sometimes have me be part of the team in a way. And they do like the weekly meetings and things like that. I try to avoid that as much as possible.
Such a pain in the ass, man.
I'm like, I'll just Slack you whatever you need. Just ask me the question. I'm not gonna show up to a weekly meeting. and so like, I don't really do weekly meetings. Like what I end up doing is like whatever is needed or whatever question I have, we just Slack. And if I need more details or I need to share something bigger, it's like, I'll do a quick Loom video. And very rarely am I saying like, let's jump on a Zoom call and work this out together. Cause I don't know, I just have faith and trust that they do the work. And at the end is like, all I care about is that it's done. I don't care if they did it like super early, super late, as long as it was done.
So I'm a systems guy. So selfishly, I'm curious, what do you use to manage like all your workflow and stuff?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's something that I quickly learned to also build out, right? Because in the past I used other people's systems and understood that. And I think it was actually working, with Dan Henry, who's one of my clients right now, working with him and his team that quickly I understood like, all right, all the people that I'm working with within his team, we had to build a system together to really see who's on top of what and what needs to go out. And so just working with different people that way, I quickly realized, all right, we got to build the system because for different people, it's going to be different, but I need to build my own system for my own team. And so quickly from there, I was just like, okay, I actually ended up hiring. Actually, there's another person on my team. Now I feel bad that I forgot about him. This is actually like one of my biggest hires and my most recent ones. Was my buddy who basically helps me build out systems. Cause like, I was like, I could sit here, build it out, but it's going to take me a while. Cause I don't know. I do like using Excel and using Sana and all those things, but there's just something about building your own system and getting that whole process out of your own head that seemed grueling. So then I hired someone to be like, hey, you're my systems guy. Like whatever you see in my funnel, in my email, in my marketing, in how I run this business, like wherever you see there's a weak point, which I could actually tell you where they're all at. Like let's patch them up, let's fix them, and let's build that system. And so with him, he was paid retainer right away because I knew there was going to be a ton of work for all the stuff that needed to get fixed. And so right away he just said, all right, so when you're working on someone's YouTube channel, what's the first thing you do? And so just basically he interviewed me, I spit it all out, and then we outlined it, and then he went, did his magic, bullet pointed it all, created a nice Trello board. And now from that, I actually ended up creating a product out of that because now I have this system that basically says like, here's plug and play. Like you can either go through my entire program and build your own systems, or you can just use the system I use when I work with people's YouTube channels. And
yep, that's awesome.
That's been super helpful.
That's super cool, man. So it sounds like both, you know, the agency side of the business plus the like courses, digital product side of the business is moving along well. What's like, has there been any big takeaway over the past year and a half? Was it like, what do you think got you to get the momentum that you have now? Was it like a shift that you had as a person? Was it just like, I just happened to go to that event and meet some right people? Like, what do you think was the catalyst for that?
I think it really was sort of reflecting back on all the clients I've had and even like, even jobs I had and understanding, okay, the main person in charge of all this, like, what is it that they did, right? What is it that they do? How is it that they actually run their business? And looking at that, I was like, I then realized like, okay, I have the skill sets. I have that knowledge. I just need to build the team and the systems in place to then, you know, enjoy life is the way I want to say it. It's like, because like there's those times where you come into like, if you're your own boss, you're doing your side hustle or your main hustle. There's those times where you're just like, it's like, I don't want to do this today. Like, but it's not your own business that you don't want to do. It's certain parts of the business you don't want to do. And if you have someone that actually really enjoys doing that, it's like, oh, that's awesome. In fact, my admin that I have, my assistant, like when I first, it was somebody I actually taught, like I consulted with and taught her like some of the things that I do in building a business and building a YouTube channel and all that stuff. And as I talked with her, I realized there were certain things that stood out to what she liked to do and like how she liked to be organized and how she would categorize things. And she was on top of stuff. And I was like, wait a minute, like let me offer her a position to then, you know, be my assistant and help me build out some other processes or handle those things. And then at the same time, like, of course, like she's going to learn a lot from me whenever she has questions and whatever she's doing. But yeah, like I was just like, oh man, she has the skill set and she was actually really excited about it. Yeah.
That's awesome, dude. So let's switch gears just a tad and let's go into YouTube as a content platform. So, you know, it's been around since, when did it come out? Was it like 2006, 2007, somewhere around there?
Yeah, it's the 2005, 2006 realm. That's when it was out.
Yep. So, I mean, it's been around for, let's just say, coming up on 15 years, if not already 15 years. So it's not a new platform, so to speak. And it's still constantly evolving. Like, this is kind of a general vague question, but what's working right now on YouTube versus say like 3 years ago?
So it's a very general question, but I will point this out. Even from the moment that I started back in 2008 of like, you know, dabbling and creating, there are things that I did then that worked that still work today.
Can you give an example?
The biggest example is, and this is going to sound like the most basic answer, but it's actually creating good content, good valuable content. Maybe it's a blanket answer, but that's the truth. Like if you can create good content that gives value to the person viewing it, they can take something away from it, that's gonna work like forever. And it still works today. Like the nuances of shorter videos work, longer videos work, all that type of stuff. Like since being on here for over a decade now, it's like short content works, medium sized content work, like long form content work. They all work. The real thing about it is the content itself. Like, does the content provide some big takeaway in the value that it gives? And that value can be defined as like, is it entertaining? Right? Like, does it make you laugh? Does it convey? Does it give you some sort of emotional reaction to it? Does it help you learn something? Does it inspire you? Like if your content is missing those things, then it's not good content, and no one's gonna care about it.
Is there like, so let's, to kind of like narrow this down a bit. Let's say we have somebody who wants to position themselves as an expert on a certain topic. So they're not creating like comedic content or anything like that. They want to like educate somebody on a certain topic and they want to be the person standing up there beating their chest as the expert. Is there a framework that you typically like have people in the content creation phase? Like, how do you structure like good content? Is there a framework or anything for that?
Yeah, so I have developed a really good framework. In fact, I call it the 1 hour video framework, because to me, it's like if you write the script or you like actually put down on paper what you're gonna say on camera, and how it's supposed to look, that right there, once it's on paper, that's the video. Like getting in front of the camera, that's just hitting record. Like that's it. Like then editing.
Oh, the pre-work.
Like it's the pre-production, right? And as we say in the video production or film industry, right? But like, yeah, that script, basically that's your video. And once you know what you're going to say and what it's going to look like, your video is done. One thing I wanted to point out there too was like, most of the time there's this thing like people just worry too much about how it's supposed to look, how the quality of the camera, are we going to put like visual effects? Like they worry too much of quality in the sense of appearance than actual quality in the sense of content. Right. And so if I'm working with someone that wants to position themselves in authority, first of all, the fact that you're doing a video already builds so much authority. And the irony here is that during this pandemic, we got to see that really quickly. Like anyone could jump on a camera and declare themselves an expert and share all sorts of charts and data and conspiracy or non-conspiracy and science, whatever it is. And everyone, and quickly people saw the person on video and they're like experts. Right. So, yep. I mean, that's an advantage. It can be a good and a bad advantage, right? Like it can be used for bad and it can be used for good, but that's an advantage. Video is very powerful, right? And then from there, it just goes into the framework. So the framework that I teach people and I have them do, and you can see it with any of my clients that I work with, and you can see it with my own content too. The first thing I always do and focus on is the hook, right? Grabbing attention. Like what's the thing that you're going to say that's going to grab attention? But before you even appear on the video or say anything in the video, that grabbing attention part comes in with your thumbnail and your title. Like there's a sea of content on YouTube, and the first thing that people are going to look at is always going to be your thumbnail, and then next is going to be the title. So that thumbnail and that title needs to convey to someone first to be like, hey, pay attention. And then two, this is what this video is about, and this is why you should pay attention. So now when someone clicks on it, the first words that are coming out of your mouth need to like validate that what the person clicked on is going to be exactly what you said the video was going to be about. Like, and that's where, yep. You know, the whole idea of like clickbait and stuff like that. Clickbait to me is a good thing. What's bad is when you bait and switch someone. Like when it's like, here's the enticing thing, click on it. Not even close to what you said. Yeah, it was gonna be about.
I feel like clickbait is a necessity, right? Yeah. You have to. A clickbait is simply just making your content look appealing enough to get somebody to click on. I'm sorry that I have to come up with some like weird ass title to get people to click on stuff, but that's just like there's a game, and if you want to play the game, you have to play the game.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, definitely.
So, like, and I totally agree. Like the clickbait stuff, but the bait and switch is definitely a no-no. And I'm glad you said that because that's something I've been doing as I recently got into YouTube. Is, you know, I always try to open up my content with like, you know, 10 seconds of like what exactly they're going to get. Like I think about it as like the promise that I'm going to try to make to people.
Yeah, and that first part right there, that first part again has to validate what they clicked on. Like, and in fact, like when we think back to like movies, right? The movie trailer is that the movie poster, then the movie trailer and all that stuff, that's basically your thumbnail and title happening, right? But what's funny is that sometimes these movies have come out, people watch the trailer, then they go watch the movie, and then they hate the movie because the trailer told them it was going to be another, like, you know, it's going to be a thriller, but then ends up being like a romance or something, right? Like, like people are all confused. And so that's the thing. Like, you don't want to confuse your viewer, right? After that, the biggest thing that I always tell people to do is to give a call to action right away. Now, that call to action usually is to subscribe to the channel, but not in the sense of like, hey, subscribe to my channel so you can get more of my videos. Because up to that point, no one knows you and no one cares. So like now you're telling them to subscribe, like that could be off-putting. But if you tell them to subscribe in a very tactical way and saying like, if you want to learn more, what kind of authority are we trying to be here? So I can, it'll be
a gardening authority.
A gardening authority. All right. If you want to learn how to get the most plump tomatoes, be sure to subscribe to my channel, right? Like you got to give them a benefit, or like you said before, like that promise, right? Because if that's the kind of content they're wanting to look into, right, then they're going to be more than happy to subscribe. After that, then you can introduce yourself. You know, if you're the authority that, you know, you're trying to build, you know, introduce yourself, be like, I'm Dr. Green Thumb, whatever, right? And then again, you want to make a statement of authority besides just your name. and seeing like what results you've gotten for yourself, for others, or why you love gardening, right?
This is something that I've wondered if it's a best practice or not. Is when, so again, like I said, I'm getting into YouTube. So like when I introduce myself at the beginning of the video, sometimes I just totally forget to introduce who the hell I am. But when I introduce myself, should I kind of beat my chest for a second and say why they should listen to me? Like, what have I done? Or should I just like introduce myself and immediately get into the content? So that's like an internal battle I've had.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so some people have a tendency to introduce themselves a little too much. And to me, it's always like, if you're going to introduce yourself, do it in one sentence, not a compound sentence
or yep, some long. That's a good way to think about right? it.
Just one sentence, like your name and what you're known for. Right. And I actually tell people to keep it, like make it different each time, because that's actually like you introducing yourself each time in a video is actually an opportunity for people to sort of get to know a little fun tidbit about you each time. And for instance, in some videos, when I've introduced myself, I sometimes introduce myself and it has nothing to do with the topic of what they're watching, but it's just like a fun fact. Like I've introduced myself and be like, and have said, hey, I used to break dance. And then like, now they know something about me. Right. Because you want to build that relatability or in that connection, right?
It's a good idea.
Then right after that, there's two really good techniques that I like to do. One is I'll ask a question that's very related to the topic, so I can already survey the audience a bit and understand who watched the video. And so we're going with the gardening tip, to be like, hey, what did you plant tomatoes or potatoes this season? Let me know down below, right?
I watched one of your videos, and yeah. I actually picked up on that because I have not been doing that, deliberately asking people to take action in comment. And I totally noticed when you did it in one of your videos, I was like, ah, damn it, I should be doing that.
And I try to keep the question as simple as possible. Some people, when they're creating content, they'll ask this like really reflective question. And it's like, man, if this is a new viewer and like you're trying to like dive deep into their soul with your therapist question, that's not going to happen. Like no one's going to answer that question. It's a little too intimidating. And so at first it's like all the questions are very easy yes or no questions or one word answers. And that helps survey the audience very well, because for instance, I go back, I make my cool video about tomatoes, and then I go back and I see that everyone planted potatoes. Well, next video I need to create, it's going to be about potatoes, because that's what most of the viewers ended up watching. Right. Or maybe it's they were sick of potatoes and now want to learn tomatoes.
I hope somebody doesn't just like jump mid conversation here, because they're gonna be like, what in the hell are these guys talking about?
Welcome to the garden podcast. And then after that, I have this thing where I actually aggravate the problem that I'm trying to solve in the video. And that's my transition into, you know, teaching the rest of the content, right? And so now the few things that happened here, right? It was like the first was grabbing attention. Then it was doing a call to action to subscribe, introducing myself, asking a question, aggravating the problem. Those five
things. How long is that?
So yeah, so that's the breakdown, right? Each one of those five things should be a sentence at most, right? And that should take you anywhere. I would try to shoot for about 30 seconds. And at max, like 45 seconds of your video, because what you're doing right away is you're getting people used to the fact that like you're, again, at the very beginning, you're validating that you're going to teach them and you're giving them a promise. Then you're telling them to do something. Then you're introducing yourself and showing your authority. Then you're telling them to do something. You're basically building like this behavior in your viewer to understand that at the end of your video, you're going to ask them to do something. And I do this technique, because it's sort of almost modeling after the technique of a webinar, right? Or even a stage, a presenter, that they're always asking the audience to do something, whether that's lift up their phone in the air, raise their hand, you know, say amen, whatever it is. Like, those are very intricate, like, techniques that I don't want to. It's always tough to say the word program, but it teaches people and it gets people used to the idea of like, hey, I'm going to be asked to do something while I'm watching. And so at the end, when you give them that call to action to watch another video or to go download that PDF or sign up for whatever it is you're trying to get them to, they're more likely to do that already because they're so accustomed to doing things throughout the video. And so by the time they get to that last call to action, it's not something weird where it's like, oh, you're asking me to do something. Like, I didn't come here for that. Like, it's like, no, they got used to taking action. And to me, and also to YouTube's algorithm, by the way, you don't want a passive viewer that just hits play and sits back and opens up other tabs and just plays you in the background. I mean, that's what podcasts are for. and that's what podcasts are awesome, right? Because like, you can enjoy it passively. But a video should be something that people are attentive and they take action and they're just there. And when YouTube sees that, YouTube sees that someone comments in something, likes it, they hit play or they hit pause, they rewind it a bit, they jump ahead somewhere. They click on the calls to action, like on the cards or end screens. That shows to YouTube that, hey, this viewer really enjoyed this content because of how active they were watching it. And so then YouTube's going to be more likely to recommend more of your content to that viewer next time they're on YouTube.
That's awesome, dude. So I'm gonna ask you some specific questions again, selfishly, because I want to know. I know you get to see information from a lot of different like creators and accounts and things like this. So I'll just ask some like little rapid fire questions for you.
All right.
What's a good click through rate on a thumbnail?
On a thumbnail, 4% should be your okay. Like, that's okay. Everything above 4% is where you want to be at. like aim for above 4%. Now, one thing to note there is that percentage rate is gonna vary in different niches. But I don't at the same time, like, don't get too fixated into thinking like, oh, well, what about my niche? Like, what's my good percentage, right? Because you got to realize, like, there's a huge array of content on YouTube where gaming stuff and entertainment stuff is going to have a way higher click-through rate because usually their thumbnails tend to be a lot more entertaining and you know, drive more eyeballs to it, right? So when we're talking about, like, those in the content space or digital marketing space or any of those types of things or business, like, those click-through rates will range anywhere from that 5 to 10% range. It'll be within that space, but those are great. Another thing I would also add to this, and this is like bonus info, like, sometimes people just
like bonuses.
Sometimes people look at the click rate percentage and they're like, oh, it's, you know, 5 and that's it. But remember this, like, the impressions that you get, like, of how YouTube recommends you, the more you get recommended. So if you look at that percentage at the very top of that upside down pyramid, that funnel, that you get in the YouTube analytics. If you look at your impressions and that percentage says like 92 and your click through rate is like a low number, that's okay. You've been recommended 92% of the time, which is probably like, you know, hundreds of thousands to millions of impressions. That means YouTube really liked you. They put you in front of more people. So, of course, your click-through rate is going to go down. So that's something to be aware of. The other thing to be aware of there, too, when you're looking at your traffic sources, browse features, suggested videos, and search are all going to have different click-through rate percentages. So it depends on what you're trying to go for. So if you realize in search, your click-through rate is amazing, then your video is actually doing well. If you realize in suggested, You know, again, the click-through rate's different there. Like, so it just depends on how you want to be discovered by your content. Yeah. If you're trying to be searched.
I pulled up mine right now. So my click-through rate has varied between 8% and 19% over the past, actually this month in June. It's been kind of in that range. My traffic, let's see. Where's my upside down pyramid?
What are your top three traffic sources for your content?
So I experimented the other day. So this is skewing the data big time, but I experimented the other day with like the promote feature.
Okay.
So like promoting a video, which it got a shit ton of views really quickly. But I'm actually wondering if that was bad, because on those views, the average duration was like stupid low.
Yeah.
I was like, oh man, is this like gonna like mess up the longevity of this video if like none of these people stuck around and actually watched it? So I'm kind of like,
yeah, that's something you'll always notice when you promote your video within YouTube using like a paid strategy. Like the retention is going to be super low.
I saw. And right now, my recommended is 30.1% YouTube recommended. So
nice.
But the channel is about a month old right now.
Okay. Well, so besides the paid, what's the other three traffic?
Channel pages, external YouTube search, browse. Channel is 12%, external is 6%, YouTube search is 5%. And then I guess it just gets super, and then other is like 9%. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, nobody knows what other is.
And then that was source types, the external traffic source. Like right now, most of mine is Reddit. So like 41% of mine is Reddit, just because I've been trying to be active on Reddit. And when I can, like reference back.
Nice.
Anyway, that's if anyone wondering how my channel's doing, because I've kind of talked about this little experiment, that is how it's doing. It's still pretty new into the game. So I've been experimenting a lot with different content and stuff.
Yeah. So, cool. Yep. Cool.
Yeah, man. So is there any, we got to wrap up here because on this Squadcast thing, I only get a certain amount of minutes per month. And I guess I need to update my plan because we're about to run out. But what is like somebody that's looking to get in YouTube right now, this year, it's a great time to start creating content. Like, what advice would you give? Like, what's the like elevator pitch that you would give to somebody on like starting a YouTube channel? And then at the end of that, how can they learn about YouTube from you?
Yeah, definitely. So the first thing is that you should definitely be on YouTube. Like it does feel like an older platform. It's an OG platform. But to this day, when I talk with people, I realize that they still don't know how to make it work. but that's okay, because those who do make it work, man, it's still like, still untouchable there. It's fantastic. Like you could do so much. And a lot of my clients are having fun. So are my students. And I mean, even my dad, for those who don't know, my dad has a YouTube channel and he's been blowing up and he recently just got a million views on his channel and he's
hit
probably like 30,000 subscribers since starting, which was last September.
Nice.
So crushing it. And then if you guys want to learn more, I mean, you can find me on Facebook, Anthony Ambrese, on YouTube, Video Creator Secrets. And then I have a group called Video Creator Secrets as well, where I share a lot of case studies and I'm going to bring back the channel audits where I'm going to like look at people's channels and things of that nature. But yeah, those are the best places to learn more about YouTube for me. And then if you're interested in learning more, you can always message me.
Yeah. And I know you're being humble, but what about that course?
That course. Yeah. So the course is called the 100K Channel Formula. Right now, like, I think this is what I can do. Like for anyone who listens to the podcast, you email me and you say you listened to the episode and you enjoyed it and all that stuff, I'll hook you up.
Cool.
Let's just say it that way.
What's your email?
Email Anthony@vidstrategy.com.
Cool. Awesome. I'll put that down in the show notes if anybody's interested. So, Anthony, we can chat for a second when I hit stop, but I'm going to wrap up here. Thanks so much for sticking around and coming back for round two on the Hustle to Freedom podcast, man. It has been a pleasure chatting with you, and hopefully the listeners didn't mind me getting selfish and asking you some specific questions on YouTube. So anyway, thanks guys for hanging around listening to this episode, and thank you to you, Anthony, for coming by again.
And thanks.
And that's a wrap. I hope you all enjoyed that episode. Remember, you can find links to everything we discussed in the show notes below. And if you like this podcast and want me to keep bringing you great episodes each week, here are a few ways you can support the Hustle to Freedom podcast. First, take a screenshot of the podcast and send it to a friend who may like it. Second, I'm doing a drawing for a free copy of the Side Hustle Journal for every 5 iTunes reviews I receive. So if you want a chance to win, leave a rating and review on iTunes or Apple Podcast and send me an email at hello@gritandhustle.co. Detailed instructions on how to do this are in the show notes below. Third, take your side hustle to the next level by implementing a sales funnel to turn your passive website visitors into paying customers with ClickFunnels, the number one sales funnel software in the world. You can get a free trial by going to gritandhustle.co/profit. And fourth, if you're interested in podcasting also, which is the fastest growing content medium in the world, head over to gritandhustle.co/podcastingmadeeasy to enroll in my course now. Until next time, keep hustling, my friends.